This episode is brought to you by the Building Blocks of Faith book series. Learn more later in this episode.
We've got a brand new team member here at WalletWin, and we cannot wait to introduce him to you. He might just be the cutest member of our staff.
Four years ago, in February of 2020.
Quite a time.
It was quite a time. It was near the end. I went on a silent retreat. And on this silent retreat, at the time, we had three daughters who I believe were ages 6, 4, and 2, or almost 2. While I was on this retreat, I very clearly heard in prayer, not an audible sound, just an interior, from Padre Pio. No, that sounds crazy. He's crazy, okay? That we would have a son. And I didn't know how that was going to happen because we are a likely permanently infertile couple. But we'd been through the adoption process 3 times, so I figured that was probably in the future. I didn't know it was going to take 4 years to actually happen. And today we are going to do a little bit of an adoption tell-all to introduce you to our newest WalletWin staff member and son.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're going to mostly focus on the story that happened a few weeks ago, some of you may have missed it. I sent out a few details via email just to keep people in the loop, but this was a complete whirlwind surprise situation. And I'll just say this, every other time we've adopted, we always kind of joked that it got quicker and quicker and quicker. You know, with our first daughter, I think we had, 4.5 months? The second daughter, we had about 3 months. Our third daughter, I think we had, 6 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
And then with our son, we had 13 hours between finding out about him and him being born into the world. So it did get quicker and quicker. I'm not sure how it could get any quicker, but you never know the Lord. But let's fast forward, since we're talking a little bit about the past, and then we're going to mostly focus on the whirlwind that happened a few weeks ago.
We're going to rewind.
Just about a year ago, I remember we re-began the home study process.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was April of 2023, it would have been. And then in May, we went on a road trip to one of your dearest friend's ordinations to the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
And on our way back, it was so coincidental. It wasn't. Total God wink. We heard through the grapevine really early on that there was this miracle.
This nun.
This miracle, yeah.
They dug her up. And what do you know? She wasn't just a skeleton anymore.
She was incorrupt.
Yep.
And what do you know? We plugged it into the GPS. And it was Sister Wilhelmina in, is it Gower?
Sounds
Missouri?
Familiar.
Yeah. It was only going to add 1/2 hour on our road trip back home. So, of course,
so
we plugged it into the GPS. And we went there. And I remember she was just out there in the chapel. And we got to visit and to sing with the sisters, and then to just pray there. And you and I specifically, it was kind of like, okay, we're starting the adoption process again. Like, Sister Wilhelmina, please pray for us in this.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of took that as we're kicking this off. Let's do this thing. And then about a month later, you had something that happened when we were out in Colorado.
We were in Colorado. We went to Mass, and the readings of the day, I believe it was about, you know, Abraham and all that, and how he waited so long for a son.
And the angels
kept waiting.
Right.
And kept waiting. And then finally, here we go. He's got the son.
Well, no, the angels had come and said, you'll have a son.
Mm.
That was specifically it. You don't remember
this.
No,
I have my memory.
What?
Thank you.
Because you came out of that Mass.
I came out of the Mass. Yeah, it struck me. Because I'm, you know, praying about it, you know, during the Mass, I had just this feeling that it wasn't necessarily only, you know, Abraham being told you're going to have a son, but it was us, that we were going to have a son.
This time next year.
Yeah, within a year. So
yeah.
I thought, all right then, great. I think maybe I just kind of told you. I don't think I said, hey, I was, you know, the reading.
No, you walked down to Mass and you go, hey, we're going to have a son this time next year.
Yeah.
And I said, all right. Sounds good. The Lord hasn't said anything like that to me since 3 years ago. So I'm glad he's talking to somebody about this. All right. So we began that home study. We wanted to work with a particular agency in Texas. And at first they only take 40 couples at a time, and they didn't have any openings for couples with multiple children already.
Who were also out of state.
Yes. All these little factors were kind of part of our criteria. But then in August, they said, keep emailing me back to see if we have openings, but they didn't know who they were telling that to. So all summer, every week, religiously, I would email on Monday morning saying, got any openings?
You got any spots?
And as soon as they had one in August, we committed and we were all in. Mm-hmm. And so again, they had their own. We had already gone through the home study process, right? But then they had their own, I would call rigorous application process.
Application.
It made the home study look like child's play. I mean, I had to draw an outline of our home with square footage.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a pretty ugly drawing. but
not
it kept
to scale.
No, like there were just many, many things that we had to gather. And so I took August and September and October to just get that completely done, as well as I applied to 20 adoption grants that I'd never known about in the past. More on that story in another podcast episode. In October, I just felt that urgency come over me that we needed to get this done.
Mm-hmm. Got to get it across the finish line. Got to get ready. Got to move this process forward.
Mm-hmm. I was assuming that meant we're supposed to have a baby by the new year.
Right away.
Right.
Yeah.
But now we can see the Lord was forcing that urgency because some other really big things were coming into play for our family.
That next month, right before Thanksgiving, I got a call on the phone from my father letting me know that he had had this back pain all summer. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't going away, and they were doing physical therapy and they were trying different drugs and they were like all sorts of stuff and just didn't touch it. And so one night it was just so bad, he goes into the emergency room to see what they can do. Mm-hmm. And thankfully the doctor there, you know, he kind of goes through all the stuff that they had already done. And instead of just stopping there and kind of doing more of the same, he thought, well, let's, I don't know, not quite sure what's going on. Let's just scan you up, see what's up. So they did that. And it comes back that my dad has a tumor on his pancreas.
Mm-hmm.
So pancreatic cancer.
Aggressive.
One of the sneakiest ones. You pretty late much stage. Only catch it late, unless it's like by accident that you run into it. And it's just like really, I don't know, what, resilient?
Mm-hmm.
You
right.
can't
it's
touch
tricky.
It hardly.
Yeah.
It's just
it advances against the medicine you use to treat it.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Yeah. So not a good diagnosis at all. And I don't know, not to say it dramatically, but like a death sentence.
Yeah.
It gives you a rough expiration date. The clock is now definitely ticking. It's ticking all the time.
Momentum, it's always
mori,
we don't
blah,
have
blah,
control.
Blah. But this one, it's coming up.
Right. You know,
you have
that
a much better
probably
idea knowing when the end will come than yep. you did before.
Right.
So
roughly
that,
1 to 3 years is what they say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, but usually, yeah, usually a lot
but
closer
sometimes
to the one.
A lot shorter.
Or less, mm-hmm. yeah. So we thought, shoot, we want my dad to meet this kid.
Right.
So we better match quick because we don't know how bad this could be or how fast it could go.
Yes.
And I'll tell you, as
we
things
got going. We know people where
going,
it went months have only lasted months after their diagnosis. We know that it's happened to people.
And then it was like, well, things started going in the summer. Did the time start then? Do we have no time? And
right.
So who knows? And at the beginning of it all, it was starting. So we're getting into this and, you know, we haven't been matched yet. And now he's starting chemo. And he's losing a lot of weight and it's just kicking his butt. And so it looks like that time's getting shorter and shorter and there's no match. You know, it's not like, oh yeah, we're matched. We're, you know, the baby's going to be born in,
January
or February, whatever it is. There's nothing there. Yeah. So it's like, all right, well, if we get matched, well, then we hope it's a quick one. Otherwise, it's, you know, 5 months out and who knows?
Yeah.
So there's a whole other layer of, I guess, urgency to that onion.
Yeah. And so in November, I forget how many cases we shared our profile with, but I think it was over 10. And then in December, things kind of evaporated. Cases just dried up. And I'm guessing that's a little bit due to the holidays and expectant moms just wanting to kind of pause for a little bit and kind of regroup in the new year. The agency doing the same. That makes sense. So it was kind of like crickets. And in the middle of this, without getting into all of it, our family got COVID. Jonathan randomly developed AFib, had two emergency visits himself on Christmas Day, and then while we were out of town sponsoring a conference. Just very dramatic and scary things happening. So it kind of felt like there was this compounding effect. And then, yeah, the stress with the adoption and it's crickets and we can't control it. And I just want everything to work out was starting to take a toll. And after this conference, we then traveled out east to spend time with your parents for several weeks. And the winter, seasonal affective disorder, I definitely have that. You know, if the sun comes out at all in the winter, my mood triples. if it's gray, it's very difficult to have a positive, chipper, upbeat day. So there was just a lot of stress kind of compounding and strain, if you will. And I was starting to just feel panicked and worried. And I started to fall into desolation, spiritual desolation, and just borderline despair a little bit. Multiple other things kind of happened in the adoption journey. One of the hardest ones was our agency. You know, I wrote in to them after I think we were not rejected, but just passed over for maybe like the 17th through the 18th time. And I said, could we get a little feedback on our profile? Because, you know, I think we're a pretty cool, unique family. And I don't know why we're not resonating with anybody.
I think we're cool. Why doesn't everybody think we're cool? We're cool.
Pretty much. You know, it was a veiled on the sly version of that. Or I attempted to sound that way, but I didn't. And the director actually then said, can I call you? And part of me is like, if we ever go back into the adoption process again, I'm going to have them look at our profile right away. But now I feel really good about where we are. Mm-hmm. So the profile we initially submitted, we did it ourselves. A lot of times they recommend you spend $1,000 to $2,000 to get it professionally done by a storyteller, graphic designer.
And though we had adopted three times before, we had never done this.
No, we never had. They were always just...
They just kind of came together outside of this... maybe more standard process.
Exactly.
So it was just a step in the road that we never had to take before. So we were new at this. So we're looking around at what do we put in this thing?
Yep. And I kind of thought, oh, we've been storytelling for years. And Jonathan, he's a good graphic designer. Like, we can do this ourselves. But we drew way too heavily on some examples we saw online. And I thought it was supposed to be like a professional photo shoot. And we were supposed to come off really clean cut and a little vanilla. And I didn't really understand that our profile was coming off as distant. You didn't see any pictures.
Generic.
You didn't see pictures of our house. You didn't see pictures of like our playroom. You didn't see pictures of our kitchen table. Anything that makes us us. There just weren't photos of
it. The tone was also a little...
Oh, kind of removed.
Elevated and remote.
Yeah. And I didn't know that's not what we were supposed to do. I thought that's what we were just supposed to do because that was what the profiles I saw online looked like.
Just turns out we looked at really bad examples.
Yeah, apparently. So the agency said, nobody's resonating. You seem stiff and stuffy and unrelatable. And that was just a blow, a really like, it just felt very humbling. But then I remember, so we took that weekend because we don't let a whole lot of time pass. We don't let the grass grow under anything if there's something to be done about it. No. And so we took the entire weekend. This call was like on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We redesigned our entire profile. And when I say we, I mean you.
Yeah. You know, you did most of the rewrite.
I did a lot of the
rewrite.
But
I also made it look a lot better. So it looked a lot like those examples. And now it looked a lot better.
It looked so much better. It had life pouring out of it. I told a lot of stories. And just, it made us look like real people. And then we had a decision that we wanted to kind of go next level. Mm-hmm. And it took us a little bit of time to get it going. But I told John I wanted him to make an adoption video for us, just a 60 to 90 second, almost like an Instagram reel.
Like a highlight reel of our family.
Of our family. And all the videos I see out there of adoption videos, they're all like couples sitting in front of a camera, talking at it.
It's like an interview, talking head video.
And it's kind of boring. And yeah. I just thought, no, I don't want that. I want Instagram reel of our family playing and having fun and delighting in each other and all the things that we love and value. I want that packed into this video with some good music. And so it took a little bit longer, but we turned in the new profile. And then in February, it was another cricket month.
It was pretty slow.
January, there was another 10. Mm-hmm. So November and January got us to like 20 cases that all passed us by. February, we got their profile redone, but it was crickets. Crickets, 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 crickets. At the end of the month, though, in a 2-day window, 4 cases came through. Mm-hmm. And we were really hoping that maybe we would get chosen. Mm-hmm. And I remember one of the cases that came in, we didn't know that 4 were going to come in the next couple of days.
Yeah, they trickled.
So when the first one came, that's when Jonathan was like, I'm staying up all night and I'm making a video.
I'm getting that video done.
I'm getting this video done. And even if it's not for this expectant mom, mm-hmm. The Lord's using her as a catalyst to get me to get this done. And we both agreed on that. Mm-hmm. And we both agreed that God allowed the whole story to unfold this way, that we were going to actually thank our horrible, terrible, crappy profile because we weren't good enough to get looked at early because we were always supposed to be ready and available for the child that God had for our family mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and for the expectant mom that we were supposed to be in her life and she was supposed to be in our life.
Yes.
So we had all this. We were in a better space mentally, emotionally, spiritually.
Yes. And a couple of days before that, you know, because it was all these crickets and we're just waiting. It's like, oh, we just got all dressed up. Now there's nowhere to go, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think you were feeling a little, just kind of down and out about it.
Oh, I remember this night.
And then, I don't know what it was. Maybe we came back from our little weekend in Minnesota or something. But, you know, you needed your introvert, leave me alone.
I had to ramp up my self-care massively during the adoption wait. And so I was taking probably 4 nights a week an Epsom salt bath with red light therapy and aromatherapy and Gregorian chant. And this was going to be one of those nights for me.
So
that right, means
Amanda,
Jonathan needs
Amanda's
to go.
Gone. I can just go do whatever I want. And normally that would mean watching YouTube, doing a crossword, playing a game, doing the dishes, maybe things like that. But that night I was sitting on the couch and I think I looked at you. Yeah, you were still around. I go, you know what? I think I'm going to go up to church and pray a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go do a holy hour.
Which it was 9:30 at night. So I was a little astonished, but I was proud of you. And that was a good option.
Yeah.
And I think on the way out the door, I said something like, can you and Jesus just like figure this whole adoption thing out? I've been pounding the door. I'm getting nothing. You just need to figure this out with him.
Which was good you said, because one might think, well, why wouldn't he be mentioning this normally and regularly in his prayer life?
Jonathan doesn't tend to mention anything of our family in his prayer
life. No. Jesus. I am naturally very content.
Very simple.
And happy with what the Lord gives me at any moment in time. So I'm just usually thinking, hey, this was great. This was great. Thanks for that. Oh, aren't you the best? And, you know, maybe I don't remember either to get to the, hey, what about this? And
pray for my family. You don't mention all that.
Not always. So it was a good reminder, a good exhortation. So I get up there And I'm praying. It was just, you know, just kind of have some fun. And as I'm sitting there praying, I was just moved to read. I thought back to our first anniversary. We were in Rome, and on that trip, we visited the prison that Paul was in, where he wrote
First Timothy.
And I just thought, you should read what Paul wrote in that prison. Okay. Sure. Why not? I'll go on a ride with you. So I figure out what it was and where it was, all the stuff. So I start reading through, and even boom, right there in the first chapter, he's talking about that we are not given a spirit of timidness, but of power and self-control and love. So I thought, oh, and that just struck me as I read the whole thing. I came back to that. I was like, all right, this is it. What am I doing with this? I want to pray about the adoption. I need to do it in power, love, and self-control, apparently. But I didn't need to figure it out. He did. So I just asked him to do it. And then I hear, again, it's not the big echoing voice from the heavens or anything. Just the movement in my heart. I hear, you must beg me for this son of yours.
Dang.
And I thought, holy moly. Well, what do I need to do for that? And then it just hit me to write a prayer and pray it every day for 9 days. Do a little novena. DIY novena action on this. And I thought, this is perfect because I'm writing it, like, there's power in our prayer. Check. I'm asking for our hearts to expand so that we can love and bring in another child and expand the love in our family. So love, check.
And you got to remember to do this for 9 days.
That's self-control, and I need that. I can't tell you how many novenas I've prayed over a period of about 30 days to get through it. So bingo, bango, check, check, check. This is what I'm going to do. I write this little prayer, real simple. I pray it. And then I was good to go because I figured, all right, that's what we're going to do here. And it was a little crazy. It's always, there's a little stepping out in faith, and there's part of me that's like, oh, yeah. You know, like, there'll be graces in these 9 days, and like, something good will happen in the 9 days.
Kind of want to self-protect in case Jesus doesn't answer.
Yes, in case there's not a baby in 9 days.
That seems crazy, right?
That's super crazy. And you just kind of keep that. Yeah. There's going to be blessing coming in the 9 days. Just like a good exercise to go through. Just always having like a door available to jump through on the ninth
Save
day
face.
At bedtime when nothing's happened yet. So anyway, but I came home. I didn't share any of that with you, but
no.
I shared, hey, I was in prayer.
I got my novena.
This is what we're going to do. And you're like, all right, cool. So we prayed the prayer.
And then you persevered in that.
I persevered. The rest of the story after this. Are you looking for a great Easter gift or First Communion gift this spring? Well, here you go. The Building Blocks of Faith series. These are a series of books. You know, they've got the Catechism of the Seven Sacraments. They've got a book on the Mass, and it's all done in pictures of models made with Lego bricks. I'm talking little Lego altar, little Lego priest, everything. And I'll tell you what, our kids love these things, and they teach so much about the faith. Did you know that when Adam and Eve were kicked out of the Garden of Eden, an angel drew a fiery sword so they couldn't re-enter? And then in the Garden of Gethsemane, Christ tells Peter to sheath the sword. Or here's another one. When they were kicked out of Eden, the ground was cursed with thorns. But later, when our blessed Savior left the Garden of Gethsemane, he took our curse, the thorns, with him as his crown. I just got goosebumps. This is just a taste of what you and your kids will learn with these great books published by Sophia Press. They're graphic novels with over 700 illustrations and pictures in each book, and they've got an imprimatur and all that good stuff. Check out the Building Blocks of Faith series by Kevin and Mary O'Neill at uponthisblock.com. That's uponthisblock.com. Use promo code WIN and receive $5 off your book and free shipping. That's promo code WIN at uponthisblock.com.
Okay, back to the story. The four cases in the 2 days, and again, they did not come in all at the same time. It was the first case came through, and then the next one maybe that evening, and then the next two the next afternoon.
And on top of it all, we are not even in the same time zone anymore.
No, we're not.
This is already scheduled. I did a trip out east, just me, to spend some time with my parents.
You've been doing that off and on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Since, so this is one of those.
Diagnosis.
And so we're getting these cases. We got to talk over the phone while we're looking at the email. And I'm, you know, praying my prayer every day while I'm away. And this is when I made the video.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
The first case, yeah.
Yes, we wanted to do this video, get it ready. And so it was a bit of a nice thing, right? I was away, so I could kind of
pound it out.
Give some extra time to it, get it ready, and get it gone. So we had the video. Now that's starting to get incorporated into our presentation.
We would usually write a letter, mm-hmm. and then the agency would then email them, or I don't know how they actually got it to them, show our profile.
Yeah.
And we were going to put a QR code kind of in our profile. And so we did that maybe on the first or the second mm-hmm. one. But I remember, you know, on that first case, usually it takes a day or two for them to get back to you on if expectant mom has made a decision or not. Mm-hmm. So this is a Thursday night. This is leap day, February 29th. My mom had the girls, and I went thrifting to just kind of de-stress, because at this point I knew about all four cases and we presented on all four of them. So that's just a lot of adrenaline blowing through the body. Mm-hmm. It really is. It takes a toll. So I went to the thrift store, and as I was driving back from the thrift store to pick up the girls, there was a song that I was listening to, and I just had this, it's happened with every one of our other adoption situations, it was a song on Hollow, and I can't remember it right now. I think it's Sing O Heavens. It's on the Lenten playlist. It was really a beautiful part in the song, and I just knew that we were about to get picked. Mm. Like, it was just this gut thing. And, of course, I looked on my email, and I saw that for that first case, she chose another family. Mm. And so it kind of, like, stood in opposition of that revelation I just had in my gut. And so I knew I needed to grieve that, but keep the faith. And so that night I took the kids home, and you're out of town. Mm-hmm. And so I put them all to bed. I ordered Chipotle. I drank a glass of red wine, and I cried. And then I watched The Devil Wears Prada to both, you know, make sure that the body's not going to keep score here. Just get these emotions out. Let's not get an autoimmune disease with these settling into my bones. Just process this feeling of not being chosen. That's okay. And I can also be happy for the family that was chosen. It can be, there's a lot of both and in the mm-hmm. world of adoption. Mm-hmm. And then I had a little bit of fun by myself while you were out of town.
While I was out of town.
I had a great night's sleep. And then the next morning, I was leading a field trip to the Kids Luminarium Science Museum in Omaha. And, you know, the only thing we know from the adoption agency is that if you get picked, you get a call. If you don't get a call from them,
you're going to need to get an email that says they picked somebody else.
Yeah, you're getting an email. Mm-hmm. So really, you don't want to see an email.
No.
You want a call. And I had already gone through the work of putting in the director's phone number into my phone, and I'd even put her in the favorites.
Oh, wow.
In case I was on, like, do not disturb.
Nice.
So that she could always get through to me, right? The only people in that category are, like, immediate family, mm-hmm. right? So she was there, and I'm walking up the stairs with some other mom as we're following our kindergartners or pre-K-4 kids. And all of a sudden, my phone starts to ring, and I see that it's the adoption agency. And I start immediately, like, shaking. I know what this means. And at this point, We'd already gotten 3 emails now.
Yeah.
Saying, you weren't picked, you weren't picked, you weren't picked. And here, no, they say, she
nice.
Chose another family. She chose.
But that's what you read when you see the email.
That's the melancholic translating this reality. And so here's the 4th one. We've got one more iron in the fire, right? And I'm getting a call. And I answer, and I'm sure I sounded stupid. I don't even know what I was incoherent at this point, like detached, out of body. It's one of those moments. I don't process moments like this very well. I envy those people who always seem to master their emotions in surprise moments. I'm not one. She patches in Jonathan.
Yes, I get a phone call. I'm at my parents' house working. My phone rings. I did not go through any of that trouble to put anybody's phone number in my phone.
I'm so glad you answered.
So I just see some number.
You almost never answer.
Yeah, a lot of times I'll like...
I'll call you like 6 times and you don't answer.
And I know who it was when you called. No, I miss those. I answer your calls. But I didn't like throw it to like Google voicemail to ask who it was or anything. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, what the heck? So I answered it and I just hear this lady's voice. Again, I don't know who this is. And she goes... I've got your beautiful wife on the other line. Let me patch her in. What is this? Am I on the radio? Like, what's going on?
Nice Texas accent impression there.
Thanks. And then then you're there.
Well, her first comment was what? She loved your video.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
She loved your video. I don't even think she looked at the profile.
The video I was like still recovering from sleep loss from.
She said she loved your video, and she goes, I'm filing this away because that was genius. And then she goes, you took my advice to change your profile, and then you took it to another level. And she loved it. And she chose your family. Would you like to adopt baby boy due March 24th? And we were both like, yes.
I screamed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you screamed. And she didn't know what to do with that. What was it again? It's like your... that.
Yeah.
That happened. So the phone call was relatively short. We hang up with her. Short. We call each other. Uh-huh. And then it's kind of like a, what do we need to do here? Okay, bye. Call you later. I'm leading a field trip. Got to go find the kids. Mm-hmm. And so I go around the children's museum randomly running into our children with their friends. And now I need to tell them. And I guess I could have told them at a later date and time because the baby was due weeks later. Hmm. You and I could have told them together.
Oh, wow.
In like a surprise. But I think that, again, knowing how this shook out.
The Lord was in it.
The Lord just allowed it to happen. And so first thing I ran into was our oldest. Mm-hmm. And I told her that we were just chosen and baby boy was coming. And it was adorable, guys. She was with one of her other 9-year-old friends. And they began hugging and jumping up and down and clapping their hands. And it was just the sweetest thing I've ever seen. And it also made me so appreciative of their friends who are so used to celebrating new life and growing families. I loved that. Every time I told any little group of kids, that was always their reaction. And it was just so special and such a treasure. And so then me and a bunch of moms, like the kids were eating lunch and playing on the playground now. And I'm just kind of processing with them in this out of body moment. And they're trying to help me.
That you're having a baby in 3
weeks.
Yeah,
they're trying to help me kind of like figure out like, oh yeah, what do you need to get gathered? And I'm just thinking I need to get home because I need to reach out to these 20 adoption grant places. And I got to tell them we're matched because 80% of them, what you do is you apply, they have your file, and then they say, reach back out when you get matched, and then we'll go ahead and consider you. So basically, they're all just sitting there waiting. And I need to let them know so they can go ahead and set up a review with their board of our application. Mm-hmm. Because I only have 3 weeks, is what I thought.
Yes. And so I'm back in Pennsylvania. I go downstairs. I tell my mom. She's happy. And my dad wasn't home. He was at an inpatient rehab hospital thing. And so he's doing physical therapy all morning, most of the afternoon. And what my mom and I were doing, we'd go in late afternoon, stay through the evening, and then go back to the house. So I thought, okay, I want to tell him right away, but I'd like to tell him in person. So I'm going to wait till we get there later this afternoon. So I tell mom, she's all happy, she's excited, we hug, and then I go back to work until it's time later to go see dad.
Yep.
So a couple hours later, we get in the car and we start driving over to the place. We are, I don't know, 5 minutes or so away, and the phone rings again. Oh, who's this?
Well, it's the agency.
I guess I'll answer it. I don't think I even remembered the number or anything. Mm. So I answer it, and there's that voice again. Oh, I've got your beautiful wife right here. So she called you first.
She always calls me first. Well,
but she already like had you with her. Like she didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to
Well, wait. When I saw her calling again, I thought it was that the adoption was disrupting and that this wasn't going to happen anymore.
Yeah, like she's not going to call and just be like, hey, isn't it exciting? Okay, bye.
Isn't this great? Like, yeah, no. She's going to call with bad news or a change in the plan of some sort.
Yes.
And she knew that I would be sitting there with a knot in my stomach. So the first thing she said when I answer is, I've only got good news, but I've got an update. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, whew, whew, okay. My heart can go back into its cavity and out of my throat.
So she calls me and then she, you know, once I'm on, then she starts talking and she tells us
that the expectant mom was taken to the emergency room by a caseworker just to get a little bit of a workup, a look at how the pregnancy was going. And there was some low amniotic fluid concerns. And so they decided that it would just be in everybody's best interest for her to just be induced because, you know, that can pose a real risk for her and for baby. Mm-hmm. So they decided that they were just going to induce that night. And they needed us in Corpus Christi, Texas, yesterday.
Yes, instead of having a baby in 3 weeks, we were having a baby.
In 12 hours.
Or less.
Yes.
So...
at this point, my brain imploded. I wasn't even making sense at all with 3 weeks. I just get stunted. That must be a very melancholic trait, but I get stunted and I can't really think through things clearly. So at one point in this 5 minute window of you, between you and going to tell your dad, I had decided I was going to load the van with the kids and drive through the night to Corpus Christi, Texas, 20 hours by myself.
Horrible idea. Yeah.
I get migraines if I don't sleep. I can't drive at night because my eyes get a little bit wonky. The kids for 20 hours in the car, they can't even come into the hospital. It was a really, really bad idea. And we had just kind of gotten back and recovered from that multiple week trip we'd taken earlier in the winter. Mm-hmm. And that was really difficult on them. Like they had been, it took us weeks to recover from that. So a friend came over and my mom walked through the door. At this point, friends are just showing up with stuff. Yeah. They were just showing up with, here's a car seat, here's some clothes, here's some diapers, like here's a diaper bag. Like I could not even remember where I'd put any baby thing at all. Uh-huh. So I couldn't bring anything because my brain wouldn't work. I couldn't get it online. I couldn't even find our car seat backpack to like go through the airport. Mm-hmm. Had to borrow it. Couldn't think. So they came over and they heard my plan about loading the van and getting on the road with all the girls. And then they kind of asked gently, like, might Jonathan be able to fly there? And then you fly there tomorrow. And all of a sudden that just sounded, and they were like, you'll get there at the same time. We'll take care of the girls this week. We'll keep them in their routine. Like they made too much sense. And it just kind of like made me come to my senses and realize that that is a far superior plan, especially because you just don't know what's going to happen. He could be in the NICU. Spoiler alert, he was. And just having them stay in their routine was better. Yeah.
So, and again, this is all happening in a few minutes. So we're talking on the phone then, and...
I want to say it's like 4:30 in the afternoon for you.
Yeah, it's about 4:30 for me on the East Coast. And we've determined...
the one who has to fly.
Yeah, it might be easier to fly out tonight from Baltimore. a very busy airport instead of Omaha. Not so busy.
Yeah, there's like two flights to Corpus Christi tomorrow.
Instead of tons. So then, all right, so we're, I think you're on the, you're looking some stuff up too. We figure out, yes, there is a chance this might work. There's a flight and like...
At 7:30 from BWI and it's got a seat.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah, this wasn't, yeah, this was more like five, I think.
Okay.
I didn't have much time at all. So anyway, we arrive at the place to see my dad. And now I have to tell him two things. I have to tell him we're having a baby and we're having a baby.
I got to go.
So I have to go. So that's what we do. We go in and my mom, we walk in. The first thing she goes, honey, we're going to need to call somebody because I need a ride home tonight. And he's like, what's going on? Because obviously I just drove her.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, well, Dad, I have to fly out to Texas tonight and pick up your new grandson. And he's like super happy and he's crying a little bit and give him a hug. And he's like, go.
Go, the flight.
So then I pulled on all of my Mario Kart training experience and just drove quickly.
You had to go back to your parents.
I had to take my parents' car back to their house, pack my stuff up. Thankfully, most of it was still in my suitcase because I didn't unpack.
Good.
Throw it back in there. Get in the rental car that I had. Thankfully, I kept the rental all week. I almost did little one-ways on the ends of the trip. Mm-hmm. So then I threw it all in the rental car, flew down to Baltimore. While I'm in the car, I'm on the phone with Southwest, getting them to change my flight out to Omaha later that week to a flight later this evening to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Flying around. I get the rental car back.
You don't even fill it with gas.
I didn't have time to stop for gas.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, I've never done this in my life. I don't think I ever will again, but I'm going to pay
a couple bucks more.
Ridiculous upcharge per gallon and let's let them fill it up. Mm-hmm. I fly in. I turn the car off, open the door, grab my bag. The lady's not even like to me. I go, hey, my flight's about to leave. Am I good to go? Yeah, you're good to go. Which way do I go? Down there. I run down the red line. I hop on the shuttle.
The shuttle.
When I was getting the car, when I arrived, I thought, oh, I'm going to have to add like 20 minutes when I come back because this thing takes forever.
Oh,
I'm sitting there and I'm waiting. I go, is this the next one to leave? Yeah, when's it leave? In like 3 or 4 minutes. Okay. So I'm sitting there. The driver's like talking to his buddy. They're eating a bag of chips.
Oh, my.
I got to go get my kid.
Slip him a tenner and get out of there.
Finally. We start leaving. We move about 15 feet and he stops. And there's another family coming. Get on the bus. They get on the bus and then we're finally off. Thankfully, the Southwest terminal or whatever it's called.
First one, wasn't it?
Is the very first stop.
Whew.
I'm sitting next to the door with my bag in my hand. I fly out. I'm already checked on. I'm carrying on my bag. Mm-hmm. I'm not checking nothing.
You're not Billy Dabbing.
I'm already checked in. I checked in, I think, on the bus on the way over.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm just flying through. I go, security is like right there, thankfully. And there's like one family in front of me.
Wow. Flying out on a Friday night.
No, they were taking not a little the popular bit of time.
Time.
I was getting a little nervous. And then I put my bag through. And then they had to scan it a second time.
Oh.
Because it was so full of stuff.
It's an hour from where your parents live to the airport.
So over an hour.
It's like, what, 7:10 right now, and the flight's at 7:30.
Yes.
And you're just going through security.
Just going through security.
Mm-hmm. They've been loading and already going, for 10 minutes.
And going a second time, and I'm waiting. And then they're like, I can see it. I can see the screen. My bag is on the screen. Oh, that person's shift is done. She leaves and someone else has to take over. So they're signing in, typing their ID or whatever into the computer. Then they get to check my bag. Finally get it. I run down the hallway, down the stairs, to the gate, and I make it onto the little jet bridge thing with like a minute or two left.
Wow. And that at that point, you called me and let me know.
I called you and let you know that I had made it.
Yep. You made it.
And that I was going to buy internet on the flight so that I could book a rental car.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't done that yet.
And then I booked you a hotel.
Because I was flying in and then driving 2 hours to get to Corpus Christi.
Yep.
It was one of the most exciting afternoons of my life.
Going down in history.
Oh, man. I had classical music going in the car. It was like so epic. It was like in a movie. It was awesome. It was so good. And then finally, I get in that airplane seat and then just like...
You made it.
My body finally stops pumping adrenaline out. And I'm just like a puddle. It was awesome.
And then you arrived in Corpus Christi, I think, around midnight.
Midnight or so.
And then he was born at 12:37 in the morning. And then you couldn't actually go to the hospital until the next morning.
Yes.
Because they just, you know, you can't just like, I don't know. You couldn't go to the NICU.
Yeah.
But I get a text. I'm trying to sleep that night because I know that I need to sleep. But it was difficult knowing like she was about to have the baby. And then when we do get a text, it's him in the NICU. Mm-hmm. And there's cords and tubes and oxygen. And so that night, sleep was a challenge.
Because it was a flashback to our second kid being born. And she was in the NICU for a month and almost died a couple times. Mm-hmm. So we thought,
oh my goodness.
I guess that's what the NICU means. So that's what we're in store for here.
Mm-hmm. So it was a little bit stressful, but I would say by noon the next day, he seemed like he was much better than he was immediately after birth. And you got to see him in the morning.
Yeah.
And you kind of reassured me that like this was not the same thing we were seeing with our other daughter.
No.
And that just immediately took a ton of weight off my shoulders. This was more just he was early. He was 3.5 weeks early, and his lungs weren't as efficient and ready to be breathing.
Yeah, some bumps in the road instead of careening toward the end of a cliff with a bridge sign on.
Yeah, with a we're about to pull ECMO and there's no coming back from it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was something I was prepared to go back down, but I was hopeful we wouldn't have to. Mm-hmm. Anyway, rough sleep. Then the next morning, by the way, in this entire process, I manic cleaned our house. So that was helpful to me to control the uncontrollables. Our house is wrecked now. So it was all undone as soon as we walked through the front door with everybody again. But my dad and the girls drove me to the airport and they all gave me big hugs and said, say hi to our brother. And they were so excited. And then I flew down and I got there that night and joined you. And then we also got to meet our son's birth mom that night. And then it kicked off just a week down in Corpus Christi as he got better day by day in the NICU. Now, there were little God winks along the way, and we're never going to be able to capture them all in this podcast. But one of my favorites was I was at the Omaha airport about to board my flight. And again, we're just taking things so step at a time. Other trips, John, you can attest to this. We're going to take a family vacation next summer. It's a year in advance, and I know where we're eating each day, right? Let alone where I'm staying, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So for me to be like, I'm booking a same-day Airbnb while I'm at the airport, and I'm going to arrive in 8 hours, like, that is so unlike me, but I was just chill. And I just remember praying, like, Lord, just work out all the details. You know, we've been doing the Pray 40 with Hollow, and that surrender prayer has just been a mantra. So it was very much like we just give this all to you, Jesus. So I get on Airbnb, and Corpus Christi, what I was worried about is it's spring break. The last thing I want is to book in some high-rise condo with a bunch of spring breakers doing keg stands on their balconies. That was the last thing that I wanted. So I was a little nervous, you know, about where to book. And I just pull up the search, and there's one that just looked pretty close to the hospital, pretty close to the ocean, and it actually looked reasonable as far as the nightly rate goes. Mm-hmm. Clicked it. This young couple looked really cute. And they were actually, their profile picture was them like sitting in maybe some church pews. I don't know. I still don't know, but I saw the church pews and I was like, oh, I got to book them. And so I booked this Airbnb, find out after I book it that the next door neighbors are the Pink Sisters, the Holy Spirit Adoration Sisters. There's only four convents of them in the U.S., to my knowledge. Mm-hmm. Lincoln, Nebraska, which, you know, I got to know them when I was in college. Philadelphia, Corpus Christi, Texas. And I don't know what the fourth is, but I do know that there is another one, at least. And so they were our next door neighbors. And so literally every morning we would wake up at like 6 and we would just get ready and walk over for daily mass at 7. And then we would go into the hospital and just be at the hospital for the day. Come home. And you guys, this Airbnb, I didn't even know it when I booked it. Had a hot tub.
Ow.
So John and I, you know, and it was kind of like a mini baby moon because we didn't bring the other kids and we couldn't stay the night in the NICU because it wasn't a NICU set up like that. Mm-hmm. You know, with our other daughter, they had rooms for parents. This was not like that whatsoever. This was not like a high scale children's hospital. Anyway, so in many ways, we had to go back to the Airbnb and we had to watch the big screen television and we had to jump in the hot tub at night. And then we had to walk over to the Pink Sisters for daily mass. So it was like a little mini baby moon that week. And as soon as James was released from the NICU, we actually took him over to the Pink Sisters. And that was just really special because we had been praying for him every single day at mass that entire week.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even think we've said his full name on this podcast.
Nope.
The adoption tell-all. Mm. And this was in limbo for a little bit, too, because we've been kicking names back and forth for months.
And when I was driving down at like 11 at night, we're on the phone, and I'm like, we should probably figure out a name,
because
we're going to need one in a couple hours.
Yeah. And is that when we finalized it?
Yeah.
Okay.
At least that's when I thought we finalized it, because in the morning, they asked me what his name was going to be, and I told them.
Yeah, and then you told me that it was like written down somewhere now, yeah. So there was no coming back.
I guess
so
that's his name.
I was done on the scheming and brainstorming at that point. But James Francis, and partly because James comes from your dad's middle name is James, so mm-hmm. he's partly named after your dad, and then what an answer to our prayer that he was born in the middle of this storm that your dad's facing, but your dad's going to be able to meet him next week, God willing. And then also Saint James, the greater, sorry, the lesser,
greatest.
Sorry, the lesser, big James, one of the sons of thunder, James, who took the gospel to the ends of the earth, and then who I walked the Camino back in the day. And just have always felt a great affinity to him. And then Francis for Francesco, Padre Pio. Mm-hmm. His birth name was Francesco.
Yeah.
Who told us we were going to have a son. And now we do. Padre Pio called it. So he had to get in the name somehow. And so this is a son of Padre Pio. So look out, world. I don't know what to expect from this kid. Lots of little things have kind of come up in the last few weeks that have been fun. Like somebody told us they had a dream that we had a son and that he played some instrumental role in like the salvation of our country. So those things are a little intimidating. But then I think, oh, he's Padre Pio's son. I just got to keep him alive. And then Padre Pio will help him do that. Because that's just above my pay grade. And so I don't know what to expect from little James Francis, but we certainly had a journey to finding each other. And there were lots of little God winks and providential changes. And even more of the story that we know now with even his birth mom, just this her story over the last couple of weeks too. It's so evident and clear that God was kind of like pivoting things every day, and that Jonathan's novena was truly an instrument of grace.
Mm-hmm. Because
I
was looking at it. I didn't even realize it because the day had been so crazy. So much nuttiness had gone on.
Oh yeah. Let's go back to this.
I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, I got to pray. And thankfully, I had made a list of the days and was checking them off. Otherwise, I would forget what was going on. And so I look and I see the day we got the call saying we're having a baby. That's day number 9.
Spirit of power. So apparently now Jonathan has the charism of intercession. So if anybody needs prayers, Jonathan just has to utter them and the doors blow open. I say them and doors close. No, I'm just kidding. That's not always entirely true. I have different charisms. But you, clearly the Lord revealed something new in this journey. You did what he asked. You were obedient. Mm-hmm. That's all any of us can hope to be, obedient mm-hmm. to the will of God and to respond to his prompting in our life. So thank you, honey, for praying for our family. And thank you, Lord, for always keeping your promises and for providing, mm-hmm. even when we don't see it coming and even when it feels like things are really dark. And so now we are in, our Lent has not felt so Lenty anymore. It felt, we pre-gamed Lent. We had a pretty Lenty Advent, New Year. Like, we were in the garden for months. Mm-hmm. And so we got a little bit of an early Easter around here, and that's okay. But that's it. That's the tell-all. I know a lot of people have questions about the financial side of things. And I think that deserves its own podcast episode. Because, yeah, that is another equally humongous side of it. And that entire week, we sat by James's NICU bedside. It was like I was on the computer and the phone for about 9 hours a day, getting logistics hammered out and money wired here and money wired there. I'll tell all about it in the next episode. Until next time, bye for now.
This episode was sponsored by the Building Blocks of Faith series. You can learn more in the show notes.
Thanks for joining us today. You can learn more about this show and the Wallowin program at wallowin.com.
Music in this episode's from Dylan Gardner. Listen to his new album, Almost Real, on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your music. See you next week.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
This podcast is part of the Spoke Street Network. For more great podcasts, visit SpokeStreet.com.